subscribe to Donnie Houston Podcast, man.
Donnie Houston.
Yeah, man, it's going down. This Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a very special guest today. A lady representing Suave House. Member of NOLA. Toni Hickman. What's going on?
I'm happy to be here, man. Thank you for having me on your world-famous podcast.
Yeah, you know, it's all right.
Oh, you're definitely doing numbers. I checked you out on YouTube. So, yeah.
I appreciate it. Well, awesome. What's going on?
Life is beautiful. I can't complain, you know.
New music? Were you ever there?
Well, I'm in a group right now. So, I'm doing another group with a male. Hmm. And so the name of our group is The Cure. And basically, it's the answer to everything that's going on in our world right now. So, like, yeah, we're about to drop something. We were supposed to drop on the 22nd, but now it might be changed to January because we have some stuff going on with it. So we got to make sure everything is finalized. But yeah.
So, yeah, The Cure.
It's spelled
T-H-A-K-U-R. Spell
it again?
T-H-A-K-U-R. Mm-hmm. K-U-R. Okay, The Cure. It's just a response to everything going on right now. Because, I mean, it's a lot going on in the world. You know?
It is. And me and my homeboy, his name is Big Yo, but I've been working with him. Like, he's helped produce some of my independent albums. And when everything started with the pandemic, we just was on point with everything. Like, we saw it before everything started happening, you know? And so it's just basically us putting our words into and giving it life. Hmm. Yeah.
So you said pandemic. So tell me about that. You think that this is more so like kind of like a plan, like they had this all.
I mean, to each its own, let me say that.
Of course, yeah, of course.
To each its own. Yeah. For me, when I first started finding out about everything, I just understand that our culture has been through a lot of lies and deceit with the government. And so I think it's wise for everyone to take everything and not just take it at face value just because it's like smashed in your face on the news, and you know they're teaching us to be paranoid and things like that, when like you have to look at the statistics, look at, you know, who's surviving and what's the end game for all of this. If it's not working, then what is really the end game for all of that, you know? So yeah.
I hear you. So are y'all putting out music out right now? You still like y'all still working on the
album is pretty much done. We still working on music. Like I said, we have a situation that I don't even want to speak on until it's just like complete, you know what I mean? But we have a situation, and so we have to get stuff finalized before like we move. Yeah.
So tell me, because I mean, it's like when at first when you can't really hear it. When you talk, the accent comes out a little bit.
Yeah.
tell me about growing up in New Orleans.
So my story is a little bit different because I wasn't born in New Orleans.
Oh yeah.
Mm-mm. I know I sound like it, but I was raised in New Orleans. I was born in New York.
There you go. Now it's coming out even more. Go ahead.
I was born in New York, raised in New Orleans, and even moved to Houston back and forth. Like, I'm kind of from everywhere, but New Orleans was like my life lesson place. Like, it's the place I always have gone back to. It's the place I claim is home, and it has claimed me, you know? So, yeah.
So, how old are you when you get to New Orleans?
The first time I was 7.
Oh.
But I was in Louisiana before that. Because my grandmother owned a whole subdivision in the country part of Louisiana. And so I was there first and then moved to New Orleans. Kind of went back and forth. I've been a traveler. I came from, I traveled to Atlanta because my daddy was in Atlanta. I would go back and forth with that, you know. Yeah.
Hmm. So, okay, tell me about, because the thing about New Orleans is, like, in that era, like, this is, like, when a lot of people that became legends, you know what I mean? Like, y'all are, like, coming up in the scene, you know what I
mean?
Yes,
indeed.
So, who are you, like, crossing paths with once you start getting into music?
So, check it out. Me and, his name was Magnolia Slim. Okay, we would be in the Magnolia Projects, like, he'll be beating on the wall, and we'll be rapping, you know, just rapping together. Me and Juvenile, we used to be in this club called 49ers. I mean, not 40, yeah, it was 49ers and this club called Newton's. But we'll be on the mic, like,
Were you getting into the bounce thing? Or like,
yeah, I did bounce. That's where, I mean, I rapped. I rapped too. My old rap name was T Capone.
Man.
I was Al Capone's daughter, right? So, but yeah, that was my old rap name. And I rapped, but I also did bounce. Yeah.
So are you seeing like Mia X and like Ghetto Twins and like all them back then?
No.
And are you a group or are you just solo at the time?
I was solo. I was T Capone. I was solo. I didn't become a group with my partner, Tylene. Well, Redbone was her name. And we didn't become a group until, like, we went to New York and we became a group. Hmm. But, yeah, we went as solo artists and then we became a group.
Was it a suggestion for them to make y'all a group?
Just something we just decided to do.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, are you seeing, like, you got, like, Cash Money, you got Big Boy Records, you got, you know, all this stuff going on there. Are you not trying to be involved? Because you end up on Suave House, but, like, are you not, like, getting involved with them? And what they were doing?
Well, before I left New Orleans, and this was a period of time, because I've been doing music professionally since I was like 16 years old. But
this is the bounce and the Juvenile.
Yeah,
and all that
bounce
best.
And real rap, like real rap.
The
I was a lyricist. Yeah.
At 16.
I've been on my own since I was 15, but I was signed to a label in New Orleans called Full Pack. And it was me and another very dope artist. He was so dope, but they like would get us shows, get us paid. Like it was really like I was signed. I was a local celebrity, you know.
Oh wow!
Yeah. And
but
yeah.
You said you've been on your own since 15, though. Mm-hmm. So what? I mean, how did tell me about that?
I was a knucklehead a little bit, like. And, you know, looking back at it, it was stupid. It was real stupid, but I was kind of following a crowd of ignorance because at that time I had too much time to myself. I didn't really have guidance or anyone telling me what to do. I was kind of like on my own because my mom was going through her own thing, you know? So, yeah. And so I was kind of on my own and I'm my mom's only child. So I ended up adopting people as my family out there, you know, and I mean, we lived in the hood. So eventually, because I had all this time to myself and I'm seeing how people making money and I'm just like,
So you getting out there like hustling or like what?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, no shit.
Tell me more.
I know, right? It started small because some of my biggest, like, they was like my big brothers, you know, and so they did the big stuff. And I had a homegirl. It was two of them, Big Twin and Lil Twin. Lil Twin was really little, and Big Twin was huge. She'll beat up men. Like, I'm telling you, she'll beat them up. And
where's
so,
Big Twin and Lil Twin now?
I have no idea. I really don't. Like, I wish them peace, though. I have no idea where they are. But me and Big Twin ended up, like, doing our thing, getting our own space in this place called The Goose in New Orleans, and that's where we did our thing, and we pretty much supported ourselves.
No
like
shit.
That.
So y'all hustling like crack, or y'all just weed it? No shit.
Yeah.
And this is their era, so I mean, y'all making money.
Yeah, but I'm gonna tell you, I was a scaredy cat still, like you know, and so.
At 15 years old, you out there on the block like this?
15, 16, yep. Yeah, I was. I was a knucklehead. That's what I'm telling. I was a knucklehead because I didn't have anybody in my ear telling me any different. Hmm. My surroundings were
the reality. Just product of your environment.
Yeah. And so, but I'm going to tell you what made me stop. I was outside. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And this cop rolled up on me. And I had some on me, but I put it in my mouth. And I swallowed it. And he rolled up. He said, "What you doing out here this time of night?" And I said, "Oh, I made up some kind of story. I don't remember exactly what I said." And he said, "I want you to know I've been watching you." That's all I needed to hear. And I'm talking about next day, I told Twin, I said, "Look, I'm done. I ain't doing this no more." And so I slowly started getting myself together. I got a job at this place called Mattress King, something like that in the hood. And I started working there. And from there, I was just like, I really got to get back on my music. I got to move. I got to. And that's really what put me back on my journey.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you go to New York. What's the whole idea of going to New York like?
Get a deal.
Just on the whim, just.
Yeah.
Get a deal. Do you and
Redbone,
y'all go together?
Yeah, we would, because I told her I wanted to go. And me and her had really kind of just met. We became friends more in New York. And so basically, we moved because I have an aunt that lives in New York still, and we went and stayed with her.
How old are you at this time? And like, what year is this? Like, around what time?
Man, you trying to count years. I promise you, I can't tell you nothing. But I would say I was probably 18, 19, something like that. Yeah, something like that. It might have been younger than that. No, it might have been 17 or 18, something like that. And so, yeah, me and her hooked up out there and decided to become a group. But it didn't, she had a cousin that was out there who was signed to Motown. But the goal was to just go get a deal, you know. And so we went out there and got on my auntie nerves, and she was just like, "Y'all gotta go," you know. She didn't tell us that, but
that was the vibe.
She told my mom, I think.
What was y'all out there doing?
We was just, you know, my aunt is a loner. Like, she just, we invaded her space, and she like, she ready for us to, I get it now, you know. And so my thought was, I'm not going back. And so I'll arrange to go to a shelter called a Covenant House in New York. And we went, both of us went, and Red was just like, "I can't do this." And so she went and stayed with her cousin who was signed to Motown. But her cousin had like a studio apartment, so there was no way I could stay there. You know what I'm saying? And so I stayed in the shelter. And I mean, I went through them taking my clothes, taking everything, all of that. But I remember one time they took a lot of stuff from me, and I called my mom and I was crying. I'm just like, "Yeah, they done took my stuff and blah, blah, blah." And she's like, "Well, you know, you could always come home." And I told her, I said, "If I come home, then that means I'm going through all of this for nothing." I'm not doing that. And eventually I ended up getting my own studio out there and, you know, making my own way.
So how does the whole Swap House thing happen?
So Red ended up eventually going back to New Orleans. And I went back to New Orleans to see my mom. And when I am at my mom's house, I don't know how they got the number, but I'm at my mom's house, and they called, Swap House called, because Swap House, okay, while we was in New York, we was about to do a deal with Jive Records. But then they got the Ghetto Twins, And so they said the ghetto twins, because I'm 6 feet, you saw my height. I'm a giant. And Red is like, I think she like 5 feet even at the most, you know? And so they were like, well, the ghetto twins are more marketable than y'all. So like, that was it. So, like I said, I went to New Orleans. And Suave House called my phone, somebody from Suave House, because they were supposed to do our demo deal tracks. And they was like, well, what happened with the thing with Jive? And so basically told them that. And then they was like, well, where the other girl at? So I called her on three-way. And Draper got on the phone, and he was like, I need y'all to rap over the phone. And we rapped over the phone, and like a day or two later, he flew us out. And that was a wrap.
Man, okay, so tell me about, what's your first impressions when you get to like meeting Tony Draper and getting around Suave House, and like who's some of the first artists you're getting around, and like
everybody was cool. Like I was so excited to just be a part of this new fam, because I was jamming the Suave House. Like that's, you know, that's who I used to, I kind of was raised up on them, so I'm just like, okay, you know. But I knew I belonged there at the same time, so I wasn't like, you know, fame struck or nothing, you know what I'm saying? But I think the first ones I met was actually Sugar, the Knuckleheads. I met her first. And then I met Ball and them, T-Mix. Just, I met all of them. We both met all of them, and it was like, it was so much love, you know? Like, they welcomed us.
What's the projects that they're working on right now at that time? Like, what do y'all first get there and like, hop on?
Because I remember the studio was in this lady's house at that time. And I remember working on Welcome to the Suave House. Like, I did that hook, you know? But I remember working on that. No, Mr. Mike. It was Mr. Mike. That was the first one. In the midst of the smoke.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so.
That's crazy. Okay, so what, man, y'all do the, what was the compilation? Album of the Year? The Swap House Album of the Year? We trapped on there and all that?
Yeah. I don't remember the name. I'm so sorry. Forgive my brain, but yeah. Yeah, we did it though.
Y'all had a video and all that, like.
We did Trapped. Yeah, we did Trapped, and then we had the song we had put on Crime Boss album was also on there. I think Life Is Crying. That's like one of my favorite songs to this day. Yeah, it's one of my favorite.
That's classic.
Songs.
Yeah. That's cool. So, I mean, how long are you actually over at Suave House, though? Because, I mean, y'all came in kind of more so, I don't want to say towards the end, but, like, later on, you know.
We did. I would say we had a good 2 years probably there. And then, you know, we went through our own separation, and I became a solo artist. But then.
Wow, y'all was still at Suave House.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Young life, you know, it happened. But I became a solo artist, but then they moved me to Atlanta, and eventually I was offered the label too. Well, I wanted off because at that time, like, they were going through so many issues that they couldn't focus on me. And one of the things I have learned in this business is, like, and I think that's a life thing, like, you put your dream in somebody else's hands, you got to wait for their hand to move. But if that hand get chopped off or something happen, then you stuck because you done trusted somebody else with your dream. And sometimes we have to have trust in people, but we also have to keep a sense of control for ourselves because we never know what the future holds, you know? And that was the situation because they moved me to Atlanta, and I was supposed to work.
Did they have a division there or something, or what was the move?
Yeah, they was going to do Suave House South. I think that's what they were calling it. or Swab House Atlanta. They was calling it something like that. Yeah.
And so what actually happens to Swab House? Is that like, because it seems to just like fade into like.
I mean, you know, Draper still was putting out, because I know he had an artist named Noah, and he had another artist. Both of the artists were dope. I just think that at the peak of Swab House, like really blossoming, that's when it also started having a lot of snags being revealed. And
when you say snags, like what you mean?
I mean, just, you know, stuff going on with the artists and artists wanting to leave and, you know, different things like that. And I think that was kind of what damaged the image or the energy that Swab was holding at that point, because they was calling us the next, like, death row, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what happened, but, yeah.
What's some of your favorite times from the Swab House days?
Shooting pool with everybody and beating them.
Oh, you was a pool shark over
there? Yeah, I love playing pool, but yeah. MJG would give me a run. Everybody else, I just felt like I could beat them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's an interesting fact. I never would have put you off as a pool shark.
Oh, yeah. I used to love playing pool. Like, I still do.
Oh, man. That's what's up. So then what do you end up doing after you leave Swab House?
Like I said, they moved me to Atlanta, and I went through my paperwork to make sure that I could legally get off the label so I could move forward. And I started working with, like, Jagged Edge, and I did a song with Petey Pablo, and just started working with, like, those artists, but as an independent artist. Jazzy Faye, I did a project with Jazzy Faye. And, yeah, I started doing that, and somehow Suge Knight, because he was linked up with Petey Pablo, heard the track that I did with Suge Knight. I mean, heard, you know, what I did with Petey. And, again, I was at my mom's house, and he calls my mom's house, and it's like, yeah, I heard the song, like, I want to go ahead and get you out here, you know, come to California and whatever. So at the same time, I'm just like shook, and I know your reputation, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then I'm just like, dang, but I'm on the phone with Suge Knight right now. Like, you still a legend, dude. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just listening to him talk or whatever. And then he was like, yeah, we need to get you out here. So a couple of days went by, and then I ended up having my first brain aneurysm. And that is what stopped me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. When I always hear about those things, I always wonder, like, do you get, like, signs about that type of stuff? Or is it just something that just, like, it just happens?
I think
day?
Some people do actually get signs. For me, I mean, I was nonchalant. I was just real nonchalant. And thankfully, I was at my mom's house again. And she just was telling me, she was like, when she'll ask me questions, I would give one word answers, you know? And they rushed me to the hospital. The first hospital didn't have beds, so they rushed me again. Like, I went to 3 different hospitals before they could even operate on me.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. But my only symptoms, I would say, was, like, vomiting. Yeah, vomiting. So, yeah.
Man, so, okay, we get past that. And,
so I was in there for a minute, and I was in the hospital for a little while, and they did surgery, but I came back and I still had my mobility, you know, so I was good. And got back in it. I was on magazines. I was in Ozone. I was on the,
Oh, you get back to the music.
Yeah. I'm still back to the music, like. But yeah, I was on Ozone. I mean, in Ozone and all of that. I just back on stage, and me and another friend, who had got me like with some dope producers. Like, he was the financial backing for me, and he really believed in me, you know. And so we had completed my project, and we were going to go through Koch for distribution, which was really dope at that time, because a lot of independent artists was blowing through Koch, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so I go to New Orleans to celebrate, and I get there, and my boyfriend at the time, his mom made me some, like, vegetarian rice. And so I eat the rice, and then all of a sudden, I start, like, feeling sick and throwing up again. And I'm just thinking I got food poisoning, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking nothing else. Who has two brain aneurysms, right? And so, but when they get me to the hospital, because I kept on vomiting, and then I passed out at his sister's house. I just passed out. So they got me to the hospital, and I found out that I was having another brain aneurysm.
Wow.
But I was out because that one had burst in my head. So when that happens, most people die, you know. And yeah, so they had to call my mom to give permission to operate on my head, because that time they had to cut my head open. I never had high blood pressure. I don't now. Like, I believe in health and, you know, taking care of yourself. And I believe that's why I'm still here, because through all of that, I've just worked on just, you know, putting good stuff in my body. And so, yeah, they called my mom, and my mom got there in like 5 hours. I guess she didn't want them to operate on me until she got there. And when she got there, they told her I had a 50-50 chance to live or die. And if I came to, I would never speak or walk again.
Wow.
And so they operated, but while they cut my head open, like, I have a gash in my hair, but they cut my head open, and when they were in my head operating, I had a stroke on the table. And so when I came to, I couldn't spell, I couldn't speak, I couldn't walk. Like, one side was working, but it was really weak, and then the other side, just nothing. So the doctors told my mom that it wasn't likely that I was going to speak or walk again, and that she should put me in a nursing home. But my mom was like, no. She just was like, no. She said, if my daughter get her brain back, she going to be just fine. And she was right. I mean, I didn't get back to, and I'm still working on that, you know, get back to, like, my mobility that I had, but I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't talk. Like, I went through a lot. And so, you know, coming out of all of that was one of the biggest challenges that I've ever faced in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to, like, get to this point?
It's ongoing, but I was in a wheelchair for 3 months in the rehabilitation place in New Orleans. And they wanted to give me a wheelchair to go home. I refused. I started talking by then. I started talking, but my mouth, I don't know if you've ever paid attention to how some stroke survivors, like, mm-hmm. their mouth would be, mm-hmm. that's how my mouth was. And so, you know, gradually I started talking. I started smiling a lot, and I got it close to back to normal. But I think it's ongoing. It's still, even though it's been, because this was in 2007, so it was a while ago. But for people who go through brain injury, you're going to be working on your healing for the rest of your life, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, man, So, okay. How do you do music, like, before you do The Cure? Do you go back to, like, solo stuff? Once
yeah.
Once you start getting, like, everything
kind well, of yeah, once I got out of, you saying once I got out of the hospital? Mm-hmm. And I had to stay with my mom for, like, I stayed with her for about 2 months, 2-3 months. I was still on the walking cane and everything. But my mom was spoiling me. So if I needed it, and I'm her daughter, so she just want to make sure I'm taken mm-hmm. care of. But in my head, I'm like, if you keep doing this, I'm not going to be able to do it for myself, and I need to be able to do it for myself. So I had to make myself get out of her house. So I moved out like 2-3 months. I was in my own place, walking cane and all, falling my ass off. Like, I fell so much. But I was just so determined to get to a place that I can be better. And like I said, it's ongoing, you know. If I get cold, if I get nervous or whatever, I get spasms, I get, you know, that's mental. So it's still like working through all of that, you know.
Man, how do you feel, just kind of switching a little bit, how do you feel seeing like women like kind of dominating the game right now?
I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I would like to see more women like Rhapsody or it's another girl from New Orleans that's super dope. Dang, I can't.
Sweet, not a, oh my God.
Right.
I know you're talking about.
I can't pull her name up right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I would like to see more people talking life stories, you know, out there in the game. Because even though women are dominating, it's also on like a subject that is kind
of sex and all that.
Yeah. And I'm not knocking it. Like, a lot of people just be like, you know, you selling sex or whatever, but that's their journey right now. You know, when I was on Suave House, I said some crazy stuff. I remember this. But I've grown. I can't say that now. Now, if you still rapping about the same stuff that you was rapping about that far back, then you need growth, you know?
Do you hear certain stuff and be like, man, I can't believe I said that? Or is it just more so like, yeah, that's just where I was at the time?
It's both. Like, even Life Is Crying, whenever you hear about some of the song, I'm like, oh my God, you know, because I said some crazy stuff in that song, and Armed Robbery, like, you know. But that's why I say I can't knock where these young girls' head is right now, because I've been there. And it's not that they're doing it because they don't acknowledge that they can be greater. That's just where they are right now, and it's okay. You know, sometimes we all have that ratchetness in us. So we have to also learn to, like, when are we going to separate it? And, you know, we can demean it, but we have to also understand, like, everybody is on their own journey. Everybody.
True.
So.
True. Do you have, before we get up out of here, can you tell me, what's your top 5 favorite rappers of all time? We can do women. We'll do top 5.
No, rappers. We can do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Top 5 rappers of all time. Gotta be MC Light, number one. MC Light, when she was at her, oh man, when you say you love me, it doesn't matter. Oh my God. Yeah, I was an MC Light fan. Scarface, Lauryn Hill, all day long. Rakim. And I can't front, even though, like, you know, he didn't get as big as he was. I know he was super dope, and that's Magnolia Slim, a Soulja Slim. Like, that dude was a beast. Like, and he didn't get his opportunity to just blossom, because he was really dope.
Did y'all remain with a relationship, like, up until he passed away? I know you said y'all kind of like grew up.
No, we kind of like, because I went to New York, you know, so I kind of left New Orleans. And so, yeah, we didn't remain. But, you know, if he was alive right now and I was to see him, it'll be all love. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we was so cool. Yeah.
What's this is the last question that we get up out of here. What's one thing that life has taught you?
Life?
What has life taught you?
That as wise as I may think I am, I know nothing. And no matter what somebody does or how they are, I have learned to accept people in their process versus saying, you should be this way, or you need to grow, or you need to do this, or blah, blah, blah. No, I need to look back at me. And my goal is to always fix me now, not fix everybody else. That ain't nobody's goal, really. All of us need to work on fixing ourselves, not worry about what everybody else doing. We need to fix us.
Yeah.
And that's where the biggest problem is.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's up. Well, I appreciate you coming through, Miss Tony Hickman.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So, yeah.
For sure. You want to get your social media and everything before we get
Oh, yeah. Y'all can definitely check me out. My social media is at The Real Tony Hickman. On Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. Yeah. The Real Tony Hickman.
Real Tony Hickman. That's what it is. Well, I'm Donnie Houston. Tony Hickman. It's the Donnie Houston Podcast. Hey, man. We out of here.
Donnie Houston.
Subscribe to the Donnie Houston Podcast, man.